council and committee, of course. And I think that it really becomes pertinent for us from time to time when addressing complex legislation to ask ourselves, what's the purpose? What's the intention of the proposed legislation put before us? Whatever it is, whether it's put before us. Why is it even here on the table? And I thought that we were at least in agreement on that particular point, that it was to recognize and afford some form of protection, stronger form of protection. I suppose you could say to IK Indigenous knowledge as a national heritage, etc. That it really, why are we even dealing with this? We've got the separate acts before us. The intention of those who sent this piece of legislation initially to the Department of DTI to Parliament was that, more than anything else. And all of the redrafting, etc., has been for the sole purpose of trying to ensure that that intent is more clearly expressed than the required legislation. But I really think that even if we get to the end of this, and when we get to the end of this and we go through all of the processes and take it through to the House, the question remains for many of us. Have we done sufficient? Have we applied our minds sufficiently? Is the final piece of work we take through for recommendation to the House, is that the end of it? And there's no doubt that that won't be the last word here. There will, of course, in time come, other legislation that is seen to provide improved protection, if I can put it that way. But the intention remains the same. Now, I do want all members of the committee to be able to have their voices heard, because your voices, yes, we accept and recognize you elected people, elected representatives, various communities, are the voice of the people, indirectly if you like. But yes, we do want to make that space. But we also have to recognize that we ourselves are not the arbiters of time. Time, whether we, no matter what we do, we can't stop it. It carries on. It continues. It is something that we cannot control as yet, scientifically. So we have to be mindful of that, to be able to achieve our purpose as a committee, taking account of the many constraints that are before us. But you're quite right, as some have said to me in the break, no constitutional court will ever allow legislation out of Parliament where it's clear that people did not apply their minds. I do believe we are doing that, and that the other thing we keep in front of us, we want to ensure that what does leave the committee is constitutionally robust. So having said that, I consulted with the chairperson of the working group during the tea break and asked if we could get a list, which I see now is before you, which is why we took a little bit of time over the tea break. This list that I will ask Honourable Van der Merwe to speak to before proceeding.
Thank you, Jenny. These were some of the issues that during the course of our deliberation call it that, through working group and through the last portfolio committee, were raised by various different members as issues that we need to consult the experts on. Some of them, I think now the redrafts have actually been addressed, and I'll go through them point by point. And others, colleagues who are on the working group will be aware, we actually sent the experts by email. So we've had a written response, and it would be quite useful because I don't think all the members of the committee, in the larger sense, have had access to seeing the responses to those things. But I'll just go through them one by one. The first one was the Performance Protection Act, which I think we've now dealt with. I think we've now got a redraft of that. I appreciate that some of the members are saying that they need time to absorb it all, and I'm pretty sure that by tomorrow morning that absorption will have taken place, because that, I think, is a significant progress on what we have been discussing and cracking our heads over for some time. And this comes, let me remind everybody, this comes from input from our experts and our advisors, as well as some of our own thoughts about how best, keeping in mind what you said, Chair, we can actually protect the people we want to protect and their Indigenous knowledge. So I think we've really gone a long way on that amendment. And we've discarded some and put in some new things, and I think we don't need to ask any more on that. In fact, the experts have been engaging with us during the course of the last couple of hours. Now, the next big issue, as we put there, is the definition of Indigenous community. Now, several of the different members of the committee raised queries around this definition. The queries revolve around, first, the question of whether you only want to protect living communities or whether we make allowance for extinct communities. I believe Professor Van Braun had an input on that. Whether we should continue to add what was in that definition earlier, the question of historical record as proof of existence, and we need to clarify that with our experts. And then the other small phrase in the existing definition relates to the geographic area within the borders of South Africa, and that was a little bit of a debate. So those issues were all raised by different members of the committee. So that is something we still need to, and in fact it would be our next item on the following page after where we stopped. The next issue that I think we must get the experts to give us their guidance on is the question of royalties and what it means. Because it was stated with us at the last committee meeting where some of our experts attended, it was said that a royalty may not necessarily be a monetary reward. There may be something that is a benefit, such as land or work or something, you know, in exchange or rather in recognition of the right. And so we thought we may need to alter the wording in the bill from royalty to benefit. But we need to discuss that as well, and we need input from our various experts. The next question was the question of international agreements. Now, we put that by email to our experts, and in my own personal view, we received what I thought was an opinion via a Ms. Shabangu, which came from the South African Institute of Intellectual Property Law's Committee on International Treaties, and which all of us have in writing. We had received that opinion. I think that deals with that question, but there were other queries that were raised in respect of that, and so we may need to ask them again for their opinion here. The fifth point is the definition of Indigenous cultural expressions or knowledge, and this was a question raised by one of the honourable members, to which we have received written replies from at least one that I know of, or two of the experts. I've got the emails. As I said, sometimes these emails don't go to the whole committee, so we better put them on the table here. The Honourable Anne Rossini was the person who had a clause E and F, to which there have been responses from the experts, but perhaps they could talk to that. The second thing was, we had a word called peregrination. I love the word. I think we should keep it. I think we learned something from it, but other people disagree. They want something that better describes it, so our drafters have written something, but we need to also just get, we need to get a discussion from the experts on that. There were two issues that we've asked DTI to come back on. The one was the number of patents registered for Indigenous knowledge patents. How long has this taken place? And I believe there is a written document now in front of us that we received today, which looks like that. It says yes in PWE. Is that right? So there's an issue around that. The funding of the trust, we also have a written document on that. Also more or less a DTI kind of response. We've been given something on that from the DTI. And then the last question was the question of the definition of an Indigenous design. It has been slightly mangled in the writing of it, and we just need to clarify that. We had quite a long discussion about that on Friday, but we need to also get expert opinion on that. Although we think in the new IP17 design section, we have catered for the queries that were raised. So in my book, what I had written down, that is what we still need to, and with your permission, Chair, I would suggest that we tackle those item by item rather than paragraph by paragraph in the bill, so that we can, while the experts are here, we can hear their views on those nine issues. Thanks.
So we have a proposal, Honourable Harris.
We certainly agree with those nine issues, but we were asked in the working group last week to submit any additional issues we may have, and Honourable Albert Ambrosini and myself each submitted a list, many of which are on the board, but there are many that aren't. So I guess I would like your guidance on how we deal with issues that are contained on those lists, which everybody has, that come from the three of us on this side of the room.
You have them, thank you very much indeed. I'm just going to check and see whether or not the experts will also if these were made available, which I got them this morning myself. I'm sure that can be addressed. Honourable Ambrosini?
Just a concern that I raised to you during the tea break. It would appear as if Professor Van Braun has not received any of my documents, which compounds the fact that I also don't receive documents from the Secretariat, which a problem has been corrected. I'm wondering whether there is a problem or a specific policy directed towards my documentation.
The way in which we approached it was, we didn't send the documents that were presented to us by the three opposition members who submitted. We rephrased it. Advocate Van der Merwe wrote to the experts raising the queries that had been raised, but not copying your documents to them, because there were a series of different kinds of questions. For example, the issue on the definition of Indigenous cultural expressions or knowledge was directed to all the experts, but not copied. Your document wasn't copied. Simply what you had raised was sent to them, because there were a whole lot that had to be included in similar emails. So it's not that I don't think we did. We didn't circulate the documents we received. We compiled them into a way where Advocate Van der Merwe was able to seek advice on the queries raised. That's the explanation for that.
No, thank you very much. But just as I said to you, Honourable Ambrosini, I took the opportunity after speaking to you again. I noticed that the points that are raised here, which I take it were submitted round about the 8th of September, in fact, have been raised earlier in the committee process of issues such as knowledge, disability, constitutionality, re-expropriation, constitutionality, the money bill, the national revenue fund, perpetuity, international law, etc. These are not issues that I've heard of in this process for the first time. In fact, many of them have been dealt with by opinion that we have received, and we have discussed them. I know because I've been here chairing at the time. And on some of them, you yourself have been able to get away from your other committees and to be here, where you engaged on the matter yourself. So it's clear to me that you may not always yourself be satisfied with perhaps some of the responses you received. And that's, you know, you're entitled. I can't insist on satisfaction, as it were. But I am really quite confident that the issues I see raised in your letter are being through. I had already been through the Honourable Elvis and the Honourable Harris just before I arrived in committee and was going through yours, that I'm satisfied that these were dealt with in the manner, but we do have the experts here to undertake and address those issues that the committee on Thursday will continue to raise, as I understand it, again. And we've got them on the overhead. And what I would like to do at this point is to go across to our experts now. Now, we've got three of them sitting here. We've already had some explanation here by the Honourable Santamurva. And as I understand it, you made a proposal saying, let's address these as they come up, not just go systematically through the act, but as and where these arise. Was that your proposal, so that I'm clear before I pass?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I have received those three documents. Well, actually, Mr. Ambrosini's was more than one, but from the three groups. I think that we addressed most of them. I am talking here about things we need to refer to the experts. Other queries related to constitutionality, for which we received more than one legal opinion, and that was presented at the task team. And there were other issues. For example, an issue was raised about consultation with the House of Traditional Leaders. We also received a legal opinion on that. I'm not including that in this list because those were legal opinions that were related to issues not particularly dealt with by our experts.
From my referring to that because we had dealt with them before I went to China. That's what I'm saying. So what I do want to do is to go across. Sorry, Honourable Harris.
Chair, I appreciate the Honourable Tunawaba's effort to identify the issues we haven't been dealt with, and I agree entirely with the list. But I do still have, as you will see on my list, items that I don't think were resolved last week. I would certainly appreciate experts' input on, and that don't appear on the list tonight. So can I request that once we've gone through this list, which I think we should, we then go to some of the issues on Honourable Albert's, Ambrosini, and my list.
I've indicated that will ensure that the experts have copies of what is on my table. So going through the list we've already got on the overhead will enable us to get some copies made. Copies of what you have. All right. Thank you. Honourable Ambrosini?
I just want to clarify the nature of my document, because I think there is a little confusion. I raised issues. I received some replies. I've adjusted my document to the reply received. So even though the headings are the same, the argument, the concern to the made since Friday. I see that there has been concession to the need for legal capacity. So I will then articulate against what has been done. Another concern, which may sound the same, but it's not the same. It just it keeps moving. So in that respect, I would really appreciate if I were able to phrase my own questions without need for them to be rephrased, because then things don't get lost in translation. And I'm trying to number my documents so that they can be identified. And I, too, against my documents, have a number of concerns which are not reflected in that list.
We have agreed now we're going to start with this list. That's what we have agreed. So if we can apply ourselves, I think we can all see that that list starts. And I think what would be helpful is when we see, I'm just looking at the first one, and each amendment of all this Protection Act. Pardon? Okay. Yes. I'm saying that when we come to each one of them, not that I'm saying we haven't dealt with that one, we would give a page and a clause, as it were, so that we know where we are. Two, definition of indigenous community. I thought that we had dealt with that, living versus extinct, but perhaps not sufficiently. And then the historical record is part of the proof of existence and the geographic area. I know that we have dealt with that. But is there anything extra you wish to add in that area? Because that's where we were. That's point two. I'm looking at the experts now. Yes, Dr. Van Broek.
Thank you. I actually haven't answered the issue versus of living versus extinct communities in writing. And I thought about it for a bit. Now, I mean, in the end, it's obviously a policy decision, but I would think that if communities are extinct, then the whole concept of protecting the knowledge for their benefit would become kind of beyond this bill, and whether it would make sense in such a situation to just acknowledge its presence in the public domain and prevent maybe others to monopolize it, but say it's in the public domain. The Indian government has done that with respect to yoga, for example. They have very consciously put all yoga-related traditional knowledge into the public domain, and I think, in my view, that would make sense.
We have a position put forward, an opinion. Yes, Professor Ntuli?
Yeah, probably just a clarity-seeking question. Is there anybody could give us an example of an extinct community?
Well, we have lots of extinct communities in South Africa. First and foremost, those who did the Bushman Kloof drawings, which are classified as World Heritage, and they are protected as a World Heritage Site. And I'm not sure there, in respect to the World Heritage Site, we would have the authority of making them in any way protected. And there are other communities which are no longer present in South Africa, those of them which moved to Namibia, what we call the Rooibos Water, they used to be here, and they had a culture here, and now they moved to Namibia. I can think about this too.
I'm coming to.
I don't see another hand from members.
Yes.
Okay, from members, right. Professor Antu?
Ironically, Mr. Stamboschini, there are no extinct communities. Those communities, the Hoi San people, the San people, what you refer to as the Bushmen, there are people here who have got, that. Even currently, under the Department of Traditional Affairs, who want their own recognition of their kingdoms, of their own communities over a long period of time. So we cannot say that those people are extinct. And so-called Roy Busters, whatever, again, these ways that are very derogatory that have been used, or people who moved over into Namibia, those people are still around here. That's why I just wanted to find out just whether what constitute an extinct Aymara community.
Made by yourself, Professor Ntumi, right? Yes, Honourable Mandelmaba.
Yeah. I do recall at this point that we did discuss to what extent our heritage law protects extinct communities or extinct or areas such as Makungubwe. I believe the people living in Makungubwe are still the same descendants of that, so it's not essentially an extinct community. But I believe that our drafters did a little bit of work or some investigation into the extent to which heritage laws do protect some of the things that are ancient and not specifically protected in this law. Maybe they could just illuminate us on that.
Madam Chair, we are writing laws, and in so doing, every now and then we need to resort to rationality. Undoubtedly, there is wherever there is a continuous human settlement, there is some element of continuity between the people who live there. But we are identifying something as being a community as opposed to something else. I mean, the Gauls don't exist anymore. We look at them as being French. The Etruscans don't exist anymore. The Hittites don't exist anymore. The Numidians don't exist anymore. And yet, to each of those words, we can ascribe specific cultures, specific literature, specific imagery, specific folklore. When we see something which is Etruscan, every person who is moderately educated will say, oh, that's Etruscan. So, communities do become thing. Those who did the Bushman paintings were not Bushman Kruf paintings, were people living at the Paleolithic stage, within a Paleolithic society, which obviously may have a continuation of culture in present communities, but it is hell of a stretch of imagination. And I want also to clarify, when I refer to Royal Bastard, there is nothing derogatory, that's the name of the community, they chose that name, and they moved out there. They used to live here. When the Great Trek began, the white African-speaking people went northeast, and the non-white African-speaking people went northwest. And they brought with them a pre-Malaysian colored culture before the Malaysians arrived, which flourished in Namibia with their own culture, and they are there. They are no longer here. That used to be a South African culture, and it's a fascinating community. I wish anyone to go and visit them. They've got their own art, graphics, et cetera, et cetera. But they were here. They are no longer there.
Thank you very much. I think that's sufficient said on that matter. 2.2. The historical record is proof of existence. Honorable Kobasa?
So a point of clarity. What is the decision? You say we're dealt with. What's the decision of the committee?
Well, I don't see a broad consensus on that. What I am hearing is that, the point that has already been made about our expert, as I understand it, looking at the members, seems to be held. I mean, we were all listening to that particular one, as has been included here. Honourable
Kovasa? Yeah, I'm not so clear whether what Dr. Van Braun says is knowledge that should be acknowledged and put in the public domain does to an extent enjoy protection. I was not clear about that part of it. If that could be explained before I make a further comment.
What I was saying, if there is such a case as an extinct community, and that's obviously a separate debate, and I do think also with respect to the Khorasan community, there is a lot of connections to be made to some of those ancient forms of cultural expression. I think if there is an example where there is clearly no connection anymore to any living community, then it could be a policy decision of the government to say, in such a case, we acknowledge this to be in the public domain, and there's no benefit sharing that has to go to anybody, but it could be just enjoyed as a matter of a public cultural good, if you want.
Does that answer the question, Professor?
Yeah, it does explain to an extent. My further worry then would be putting it under public domain. Would that suggest that anybody from outside can come in, access it, and make use of it without any contribution, at least to the state, so that the state could use that kind of funds for further development inside the country? You see, my worry would be that, for instance, there are certain things that are done by paleontological scientists and all sorts of other scientists who would either be able to determine what community lived at a particular point, but probably is extinct, as is being suggested here. And I'm not so sure that I agree with the question, the issue of an extinct community. That kind of scientific discovery, in my view, belongs to belongs to the country. It belongs to the scientists in South Africa, at best, for instance, and other universities. And that there must be some protection of that kind of information, to the extent that it can't just be exploited by any other scientist coming from elsewhere outside the country and using. That's the first part, so, which I want to try to clarify more. But some of the examples the Honorable Amosini is using sounds to me like what he calls extinct communities are simply communities who, by virtue of, you know, evolving all the time, have called themselves by other names. I mean, we don't have Romans today, but we do have Italians. Who are Romans after all, and they still have all these other things they used to have in the past. We don't have Spartans anymore, but we do have the communities having evolved from that age, and so on and so on and so on. So in the same as in South Africa, because we're dealing with South Africa, there have been communities called by other names in the past, but they still exist. Let me give you an example. The Batas, for instance, are the Zulus who have gone into hiding, but they are called Batas. And so are the Ndebele, and so on and so on. Now, would you call them extinct because they have simply adopted another name in the course of history?
There's been a lot of input on this so far, but let us hear from the experts completely first, please, members. Ms. Shivanku.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have not considered the definition of indigenous community, but what I can say, especially from looking at it now, I battle to see the rationale in affording protection to extinct communities, because issue. So, in a way, what Ms. von Braun is saying is, you know, that it should be a life community seems to resonate with me. I also have another concern with the definition, but I will discuss it under international agreements, because you know, that's the aspect we sort of given a bit of thought when I looked at it now. You know, if there's more thought that would be needed in terms of the definitions, I can always refer that to my committees and they can respond. I would like to make a comment. It would be very remiss of me not to do so. I seem to have missed the boat a bit on point number one, and I would really like your indulgence, if it's possible, for me to just make two comments on the Performance Protection Act. Just comments.
This rather thorny issue, and I certainly will give you the space for later. Right. Honourable Harris, Honourable Ambrosini, and Honourable Van der Merwe.
Chair, I've just gone and looked at the National Heritage Resources Act of 1999, and in section 27, sub clause 23, it seems to me to have specific protection for example, what was referred to earlier as the Bushman painting, which, I mean, I can read it if you like. It says, and I understand that this type of protection is repeated in this Act in various places, but all reproduction rights, either in two or three dimensions in respect of a heritage site, subject to any existing rights and agreements of the owner of the site, belong to the state, and vest in the Heritage Resources Authority responsible for the protection of such sites, or by agreement with the authority or public institution responsible for the management of such sites. And then it goes on to speak about how you get permission to make reproductions of such works. I think it's very clear from what I've just read that the heritage legislation provides sufficient protection for extinct communities, the works of extinct communities. And I think we're overextending ourselves, we're potentially contradicting an existing law which provides sufficient protection.
Tini, and just rather briefly, before we move to Honourable Van der Merwe.
Yeah, I'm just trying to reach clarity because of the way we dealt with this. And I was hoping that at the end of this debate you could summarize what seems to be consensus, or if there is no consensus, is it in or is it out? If the bill needs to be amended one way or the other. Originally there was language in the definition. Which made it clear that a community was a community of people alive now. That language has been taken out, so there is an ambiguity. So either we insert the word existing before, or we make reference to extinct or a better word to be found to describe it. I agree with what Tim said. There is also legislation relating to archaeological findings that cannot be taken out of the country. They are deemed to be the national ownership. So all that which is material, tangible, is already protected by existing legislation. What the issue arises here is in respect of what is intangible, the idea behind the painting, the imagery that evocates, that which once we look at it, we can say, hey, that's Bushman time. That's prehistoric, that's paleontological. It evocates that, and you can have it in a scarf, you can have it in a hat, you can have it in all sorts of things. Now, I don't agree with Dr. von Braun about the issue of putting it, I mean, it is technically correct. You put it in a nice little registry, and nobody can monopolize it. But it's one of those extreme theoretical possibilities for which one should bother writing legislation, because all this stuff is in the national domain, it's in the public domain, and all that which is in the public domain cannot form the basis for intellectual property rights protection. So nobody could claim it for himself. And I think it's really remotely unlikely that something so staggering at the level of ideas could be discovered to justify for us to legislate in the same. So it would seem to me that we should just make it clear that we're dealing with existing communities, introduce the word existing before the word community, and get on to the next issue.
So I think
the
Honorable Van der Merwe afterwards.
Well, I was going to ask my same question again about the heritage legislation, and I was going to make the point that quite similar to Mr. Harris's point about that usually, that we want to make sure that we protect what there is, and if it's done in other laws, then we don't need it here. We want to make sure we protect what is South African and what is our heritage and what is our birthright as a nation. So I think I am covered. Except I think, if I'm not mistaken, advocates are going to do some work on that as well.
Just one thing, Chairperson. I would be very uncomfortable if we include the word exist in the definition. Because do we have the right to sit here and decide whether there is a community which doesn't exist? Because I still believe there's nothing called an extinct community. Communities have evolved all the time.
Point really is clear. We've got the Honourable Mabasa and Honourable Khadebe. Honourable Khadebe?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that when this bill was put upon this committee, the main aim was to ensure that apart from protection, it was to exploit this indigenous knowledge commercially, so that the people and the originators of this can expect benefit in the process. So, when coming to this question of putting this thing into the public domain, or even, let's say, the Heritage Act, does it provide for either royalties or financial benefits for the communities left behind? Whatever. Because what is critical here, Chair, is that it's good that all the artifacts, let's say they go to a site, extract those artifacts there, eventually they belong to the state. But let's take the very same artifacts that are used in a particular movie, which is going to generate millions of dollars, not taking them out, but those designs of those artifacts being used in a movie, which then is going to generate millions of dollars. Even if, let's say, the worst scenario that their community that no longer exists, will this thing make a, or will their heritage, is there any provision in the heritage such that any commercial benefits from those things would be accrued to the state or to the country that if it's covered at that level, then I'm comfortable with it. What's the
answer? Thank you. The last point on the member will come from Honourable Mabasa.
Thanks, Colleague Chair. Now, I wanted to emphasize that I also interpret that we don't have in the context of our discussion. And I second Member Kawaza that if we emphasize existing, by implication, we are saying in other words, we are agreeing with the word extinct. So I would move that we must accept that communities are there, and it's always better to have an approach of inclusion rather than an approach of exclusion. You know, better ever for having included rather than having excluded, because that's one of our duties here.
As I understand it, then, we're talking really on what is on page 27. I'm looking at Honourable Andrew Merger as I speak, the Indigenous community. And these were certain aspects of that, living versus extinct. To some extent, we've even looked at historical records, the proof of existence, because, you know, again, we come into existence
living versus extinct.
Well, I'm going to do that when we come to the end of this point. There are about 3 points here, 2.1, 2.2, 2.3. And in a way, there is, you know, when one looks at it holistically, they all refer to the same thing. You know, we're referring to the same point. So when we dealt with that, I will make a comment. All right? So let's just have Honourable Harris before we come across to yourselves.
Okay, Chair. As I understand it, you want to move off the living versus extinct argument, and then if we go chronologically, the next point is historical record as proof of evidence. I do have something to say on that.
I have already commented that I thought that we had already covered that. If you think we haven't, please go ahead.
But Chair, I think it's important that we do, because the experts have more knowledge than anyone in the committee on certain that the burden of proof in other jurisdictions. I would say that the historical record requirement is important because of the possibility of fraud and opportunism in this area. I understand that traditional knowledge cases in Australia need to provide for a historical record, and that thereby by including that, we're not being any more burdensome than at least that example, and I would appreciate the expert's input on that. I simply think that it's one more way we can prevent frauds and opportunists from taking advantage of legitimate traditional knowledge.
Right. Let's look at the experts now, please. Yes, Professor Ntuli.
Yeah, I'm not just kind of quite clear what do we mean by kind of historical record. But also, historically speaking, the very history in itself wanted to render extinct the people we are actually talking about right now. So in what sense then are we talking about the historical record?
Saying such as
Victor's
write the history of a nation. But Honorable
Ambrosini. Madam Chairman, we know, and I think we reached agreement and it's very clear, that there are going to be potential conflicts out of people's desire to gain the money, out of people's genuine different perceptions of their own history, out of the fact that some of these rights are effectively in different communities, and each of them can legitimately say it's mine, and the other one can do so. We have acknowledged that, and we have set up a dispute a resolution mechanism, indeed several of them, and we have set up structures. I submit that we cannot do so without giving criteria. We must give legislative criteria, the legislative procedures for these people to do the adjudication. How are they going to go about doing it? We have a similar situation within South African legislation in respect of disputes relating to traditional leadership, which at times too are very complex and very difficult when there is no clear heir. The next traditional leaders need to be identified, and there the criteria has always been that of referring to traditional, to historical records. And there it has been clarified that historical records need not to be in writing, could be related from one person to the other, could be written to them, it could be oral testimony of traditions translated from one person to the other for the generation, but they must be historical. And I think that either these or another criteria must be given to those who will be called upon performing the difficult task of adjudicating in what is a very fluid, very fancy, very uncertain field of activities.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ambrosini. Yes, I'm going to take Ms. Chibangu and then Professor Ntuli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually support the draft which dealt with, or which included
the community which what must be capable of evidence, being evidenced by historical record or other evidence, and I would really be in favor of bringing that back, mainly to have an objective mechanism of seeing that we are dealing with that community. I think it's really important to do so. Professor
Ntuli,
followed by Dr.
Mbombi. Yeah, what Rumba Abbasid is saying is that the oral tradition and so on and so forth. I would rather stick with the cultural, because the cultural in itself embodies the historical. It embodies a range of other things. It is not just a static thing. But what does that come up with the historical, very magic, in the sense, the waters. I mean, I spent 5 years with the Commission on Traditional Leadership, going through history that goes far beyond any written anything, but it was done within a cultural context. As soon as we forget that we are dealing with a particular community, a particular cultures, then we are going to remind ourselves with a lot of kind of important ways, like history, where we should be sticking to the cultural references of particular community groups.
Dr. Mbombi, I entirely agree with that. I just maybe still want to clarify with the public domain. I wasn't suggesting that anything should go in the public domain where there's any relation still to it, to living communities. And I wouldn't have an opinion about, I wouldn't dare to have an opinion about whether in South Africa there's such a thing as extinct communities. But in the abstract, I think I was thinking more in terms of the pyramids, the Egyptian certainty, the bodies, the pyramids, the Egyptian certainty don't ask for any benefit sharing in terms of cultural expressions here. So I was thinking about really some of these kind of examples.
I just wanted to ask Professor Ntuli to switch off his mic, please, so we can hear what you're saying. I'm just going to ask the advocate for Ben Amurba. You've heard some of the points being made by Dr. Braun as well as Professor Ntuli. Just on the one hand, you share the position. We were referring, of course, to page 27 then, and indicating that, as it stands here, it would seem as if this is not quite an agreement with how you see things. Just looking at it, indigenous community means any recognizable community of people originated in or historically settled in a geographic area located within the borders of South Africa. Okay, do we get some agreement there from the experts? I'm just clarifying that point. So I thought there had been some success. And then I'm going to come to yourself, Ms. Shivangu. Okay, so just that, Ms. Shivangu.
I did indicate that I wanted to raise something under national treatment and wanted to link it to the definition. I don't know if you want, I thought it would make more sense to link those two together. If we can maybe pass on this, then you will see how it interacts with the definition.
Yes, I think we've explored this point too quite sufficiently in terms of historical record and its proof of existence. The only thing that remained then was the geographic area within. That's an outstanding point. Honourable Smaller.
Chairperson, I want to focus on the geographical area and a specific point. And I know that the advocate on our previous encounter on Friday said that it could areas could read as plural and singular in the sense of the legal term. But also trying for the people or the individuals that's going to read the Act to make it easier to read and to understand without maybe going to a dispute resolution or to find themselves going to a mechanism where legal opinion is later required in order for this to be put forward. From the experts that are sitting here, because it was debated on that side,
is to add the issue of all areas, and it comes back to one of the previous comments to say, why not add something, then not putting it in there to take away any proper possible misunderstandings within this word. I think Comrade. My colleague at the back referred. I do apologize on that. The bottom line is I would like to put a proposal forward to say all areas to make it more simply and more understandable later to take out any possible confusion that for the people or for a council that might have to interpret this.
Correct understanding of asking for the inclusion of an X.
It's area, comma, or areas. It's two things. Area or area.
Made the point that you accept, that you accept what the legal expert said, legally speaking, but nevertheless you were arguing from how well it would be understood or accepted outside of lawyers. I mean, that's really the point you're making.
That's right.
All right, this will be among the issues that Honourable Vandermeer, Advocate Vandermeer will just take on board. You heard what it said there, we already have, something on page 27. And as I see it then, the broader position in the membership does seem to indicate that they would like to see this as inclusive rather than exclusive. But that is the principle we need to keep in mind. And we've had some small additions to the area, geographic area per se. The historical record is proof. I think the issue is already here, there is some historically settled in, but it talks about a community of people originated in or historically settled. It offers one a broader perspective on the concept per se. Although we have heard from our experts that possibly we may want to link it more to cultural. I'll take that on board and see where we can move on in the specific paragraph per se.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe if I can touch on all three of them. First of all, the living. The original text read which community currently lives in the Republic, and I think that was where a problem came in. So if we decide that we don't want to protect a possible extinct community, and I remember something reading this weekend that in Agerfontein, when they boarded the harbour, they came across artifacts that indicated that there was a community there, which probably would be extinct then. Now, the Heritage Act does protect all these artifacts, no doubt about that. What it does not protect, whether this is what we want or not, is something to be decided. But what it does not allow for, rather than protect, what it does not allow for is that if the duplication, a replication of an artifact found is made, and I accept that there must be permission, etc., permits, etc., but what it does not specifically provide for is that replication, when it is sold, that any royalty is paid to the state. So if that is something that we want, we need to add that protection. Because what I think some of the examples that came up were rock art being used on fabrics, and those fabrics being sold and no royalty coming in. So currently what we have done, that is provided for. We have made provision for the minister to actually appoint a person to apply on behalf of such a community for something to be registered. We need to, I think also as the team pointed out, it is not going to be the artifact that is being registered. It's going to be the concept within it that will be registered. So that is on extinct and living. The next one, the historical area, I would
bow to whatever the committee says in the end. I think it could go either way. I hear from Prof. Tuli that the word cultural will almost indicate something like that. What can be added is that we do require that the community must have something that distinguishes them from other sections. They must identify themselves, and they must be recognized by others. So there's three very, I think, difficult things actually to comply with. And of course, if there is a historical record, then that will be used to support. And the last aspect, the geographic areas, I'm perhaps not the right person to talk to this because I propose all areas to be added. And of course, to me it makes sense. I understand that in interpretation of statutes, the singular does include the plural, but sometimes we also to bring a point across, we make an exception and we put something extra in, even though it actually speaks for itself. So from my point of view, I wouldn't have a problem to add all areas.
Secondly, I think the question for me would be immediate, is this being covered under royalties later on? But, you know, because you've just raised this, yeah.
As the bill is in its current form, it will protect an extinct community, and because no one will be able from that community to apply, we've provided for the minister to appoint someone who will apply, and then once that's within the database, that will belong to the trust.
So it is, in fact, incorporated into the current, the draft that we have before us right here. So, as I see a thing, the whole issue that we have tackled already is covered by the first point I made about us being inclusive rather than exclusive. We include, perhaps we weren't all aware of, I certainly wasn't, about the royalty issue, etc. There, we've now been assured that is now covered here. And I really think that our position can move forward when it comes to geographic areas. Really, I think the point is it was there originally, although we understand, the lawyers would prefer it as a singular. There's no reason why we can't add an S anyway. It's not going to detract from the legislation. Am I right, Mr. Quetta?
Yes, Jefferson. We're not.
Thank you very much. So, from that point, we move on from here to three. But, the secretary, committee secretary, is indicating to me about lunch. But more important is the WIPO issue, which I know Honourable Harris asked to be here when one referred to it as such. So I do want to just address that rather briefly. I understand we now have a response to it in writing. Okay. Now I understand we're still awaiting it, but just to keep you abreast of what has occurred, in response to the letter we wrote several weeks ago now, and which was acknowledged immediately. When we did not get a written response, we followed up with further emails and made all our work available to WIPO. We got a telephonic response, which I'm asked to please place on record through email at the very least for the committee's benefit. But essentially, I'm sure it will say what was said last night to me on the telephone quite late, that WIPO at this stage there wasn't a consensus position, there was no WIPO position per se, and therefore, to ask for WIPO's opinion, it would vary on a number of counts. Secondly, the reference to the 2009 was no longer relevant, the document per se, when they looked at and studied what we had already sent and the progress that we had already made. Further comment was that they looked forward to us completing our process so that this would also assist them in their own work, that they took it forward over the next few years. But I asked to have that response in writing. It was indicated to me a reluctance to place this reflected the opinion of one of the MICA members, not WIPO as an organization, which had not yet taken a position. Mr. Hermans has just pointed out to me that two further emails have gone back and forth indicating we are awaiting their response, written response. And that we do look forward to receiving that before the conclusion of today's work. So I don't want to comment further because it is simply a verbal exchange communicated to me over a telephone, which is very difficult, you know, for members to look at as such. Honourable Harris?
I'll await the written. I appreciate you trying to give a verbal impression of your conversation, but I will await the written input from WIPO, mainly because you made two points in your reflection on the conversation. The first is that they won't be able to provide a consensus view. The second is that the things have moved on substantially since 2008. But to my mind, if you accept that things have moved on substantially, then it raises the question of this draft comment they gave us in 2009 on September 17th, where they managed to provide a full detailed analysis of that draft from the perspective of WIPO. I mean, if they accept that the draft has moved on, then surely this, if they were able to do it in 2009, why can't they do it again? That is the obvious question. Hopefully when we get the written response, that question is answered.
It was my second or third question to them. But I must emphasize they were reluctant to put anything in writing. But it's very little I can do. I can only, as chairperson, keep on pressing. I asked the committee secretary to bring here all the correspondence that has gone to WIPO on behalf of this committee. And the responses we have received, which is simply acknowledging receipt of our request and asking the documents which we sent, the latest documents. We did indicate last night we would send them the latest arising from today and continue to keep them informed. And I think that is as much as we can do. Any member who wishes to peruse this is welcome too. Thank you. So what we're going to do now, members, is to break for lunch. I think it's about 20 past. I was going to break at 5:30, but I'm wondering as to where that would take us other than where we are now, and that is to move towards royalties. And I don't know just how many issues will arise out. Oh, and of course we have Ms. Shabangu, who has requested our indulgence, I think, just to move back to the first point. Do you want to express that now, and I think that would help.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's not something long, just on the definition of faulty off. I've had a number of discussions with a number of members of the Institute on this definition of faulty off, and one of the things that came out of it is that there's a feeling that traditional work is much more broader than folklore, so maybe we need to consider that, because it says folklore includes traditional work, so maybe that we need to actually consider amending that definition. Initially, I was of the view that the Performance Protection Act as is should not be amended, because it protects performers, and that the other works are protected in terms of the Copyright Act. When I had a look at it, I thought, folklore could be substituted by traditional work. And then again, maybe a definition of performance could also be included, because we've got a definition of performer. However, the definitions of dramatic works, musical works, I would just recommend that we just say have the meaning assigned to them in the Copyright Act and leave it at that. And that will, do away with any possible interpretation or misinterpretation, and will just retain uniformity. Thank you.
Thank you for that input.
dramatic work, etc., is because it is not included in the Copyright Act. So unless we do the amendments there, I suppose, which is possible. But why we define folklore and not and didn't add traditional work was a comment that we got from the from Dalro, the Dramatic and Artistic Association, indicating that WIPO is currently using the term folklore. So the comment was, if the term folklore was to be discarded and South Africa should then ratify the WIPO Performances and Phonograms Treaty, we would have distanced ourselves from internationally preferred terminology and found ourselves out of step with the rest of the world. So because of that comment, we retained the word folklore and simply included traditional works in it. And then to make sure that folklore, because we would need a definition of folklore and have to include it in relation to the performer and the performance, we included in each of those definitions. Mr. Bangui?
Bearing in mind that the view that traditional work is broader than folklore, maybe we should do it the other way around. And then the other issue which we will touch on, I mean, the Copyright Act protects works which are original, and folklore is not original. So we need to deal with those issues.
And there are a few people nodding around the place, so I think the drafters are taking that into account, aren't they? The point that has been made. Members, I think, will mull over points over lunch in that regard, and then come back to us with this. Honourable Hammett?
I understand you want to go for lunch, but we can deal with it when we get back. I don't think we've finished looking at the definition of an indigenous community yet. Certainly, if the last word was to come from Advocate Fundamova, as it did, I would have serious problems with at least one thing she said. So I'd appreciate another chance to go back to that.
Because I did indicate that I thought we had concluded and then we could take it forward to tomorrow. Because I thought that's where we are, broadly speaking. Would you like to share something?
Chair, it was simply that we must understand that the advocate asked if it's the desire of the committee to extend protection to the IP of extinct communities, then I think we must understand that the implication of that is that you're taking something out of the public domain and putting ownership in the state. I'd say it's probably unheard of in the international context. It's like a confiscation of the public domain, of an element of the public domain. I think we're far overextending ourselves to apply copyright to extinct communities. No country has ever done this, and the provisions in the heritage legislation are sufficient in terms of making sure that you get permission, but to vest ownership in the state of the IP from extinct communities is going far too far.
Members? Yes, Honourable Albert?
Thank you, Chair. There's also some practical aspect that one has to consider, and I did raise this before. If you're going to receive revenue from extinct communities IP, the question is then, how is it going to be managed? Who is that money going to? Is it going to fall into the general fiscus? I know there's a separate fund, but that Honourable Amasini has an argument regarding the separate funds as well, which he probably will raise at some point. But how will it then be spent? Will it go back to existing communities? Will it be an equitable share? Will it go? What will be the requirements or the the requirements to state that it goes to a certain community that's in living, or to all communities, and will it be a pro rata? What, how it was done is a practical problem over and above the constitutional issue that Honourable Harris has raised, which I also agree with.
I thought I saw a member of the another member, but perhaps I didn't. Dr. Van Gorn. Thank you. I think a lot of the concerns with respect to who will benefit and how will they be caught by the provision with respect to when it's impossible to identify a certain community, and they can then also decide, for example, if it's really an issue of extinct community or whether clear relations, as Professor Antuni was pointing out. However, I do think it's important to remember, and that's something I believe very early on came up in the discussions, that there are certain limitations of how far intellectual property laws can protect traditional knowledge. And that maybe in some of those areas where we do touch on intangible heritage and some of the other acts, that would be one of those areas where maybe one has to see there is a certain limit. And that's why, from the beginning, I think, when there is a call for protection of traditional knowledge, it's important to remember that there's a there's only so much one can achieve with intellectual property instruments, which originally are meant as incentives. One has to remember that. So maybe, I mean, that will be one of those areas. At this point now, 1:30, because we do have a free line with, we're going to break for lunch. I would like to ask members, we're just adjourning until 1600. We're adjourning. 1600, and we will commence immediately. I know this applies to the experts as well, being here and other members. Thank you very much.
Thank you.